The title of today's sermon, and I'm giving the title in advance, is Clean and Unclean. That is to say, obviously, you recognize clean and unclean as referring to what we eat and whether or not that which we're eating has been sanctified by God. Now, what does it mean to be sanctified? It means set apart for a holy purpose. Some food has been sanctified. Other food has been, for lack of a better word, prohibited by God from us eating it. So the title is Clean and Unclean Food. And I know that many of you are very familiar with the subject, and probably all of you are very familiar with the subject, but maybe there's something else we can add to what you already know. Repetition was called by Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, and he died in the late 80s. The greatest form of emphasis. So if you want to emphasize something, repeat it. Repetition is the greatest form of emphasis. And I might add, repetition is also, he didn't say this, but I'll say it, one of the greatest tools for learning. If you're playing baseball or basketball, you practice the same thing over and over until your brain and your hands can come to terms with doing it more effectively. Repetition and emphasis, repetition and a tool for learning. Never let it be said that Mr. Armstrong did not practice what he preached. He practiced repetition. And I can think of some of the repetition that I remember from him in that he spoke, as far as I can remember, every time he spoke to the congregations, he would speak on the two trees in the book of Revelation. Now, I got a little bit tired of hearing him say the same thing over and over. Repetition not only can be the greatest form of emphasis, but one of the greatest tools for learning, but it can be one of the most boring things if you hear it over and over and over. And so I kind of felt that way. I would be sitting there trying to appear interested while Mr. Armstrong was again covering the subject of the two trees. I would try to appear as interested as possible, and I just wanted him to hurry up and get through that part, to be quite honest with you. And so practicing the principle of redundancy. God has given us rules of what we are to eat. And from time to time, we have to repeat those rules. But you know what? It's a little bit different what we do in relationship to those rules than listening to a message. Last night, after the baseball game that we attended with the Holloways, we went out to eat, and we enjoyed practicing that again. And this is an interesting thing, that God has given us certain things that are redundant, and this is not always boring. So, you know, when we go to eat, and you know how redundant eating is? we do it most, for the most part, we do it three times a day. And we practice these rules every time we do it. And so we could say that's redundant, but when I'm hungry, I don't find it boring. I find it to be gratifying. So what I want to do in this sermon is to consider the rules of clean and unclean and to review the location of that information in the Bible. And the third thing I want to do, number one, is to consider the rules. Number two is to review the location where it can be found in the Bible. And number three is to consider if there is a bigger point being made than just what went in our mouths. Okay? It's clearly about what goes in our mouths, what we eat, and the fact that we enjoy food and so forth, and we are repeating it over and over, but why would God have us repeat that over and over and over for the rest of our lives? That's redundant, isn't it? It's redundant, but it's not boring. It's something we have enjoyed doing, and maybe the message in part is there is an analogy which also we ought to be doing on every day and enjoying as much as the food that we eat. I just throw that out. Here's the first thing to look at. The first thing to look at is what we eat is really important to our health and well-being. God has given us certain laws about eating, especially meat, clean meat and unclean meat. He has given us certain laws which, if practiced, will help. It won't give us eternal life, but if they're practiced, they will help to make us healthier than we otherwise would have been. It's the time of the year. I mean, we can look and think of other things that influence our health. It isn't just what we eat, but we are, you know, the statement is, we are literally what we eat. Well, there are genetics. There are other things which also affect what we are. Now, if you're attending or meeting me for the first time here, as the Graces and the Stovers are, did I get that right that time? Then you may not know that I used to have hair. I have trimmed my hair lately because I have skin cancer from the sun appearing on the top of my head. And the way to treat it is to get the hair out of the way. And so that's what I've done there. There are other things, in other words. This is the axiom. We are what we eat, but there are all kinds of other things that influence our health as well. Health and well-being. Gardening, we do. And the Bells do. I suspect the Graces, maybe the Stovers also do gardening and raising their own food. We plant and grow food at our house and our garden. And even if we're out of season, we go to the grocery store and we consider whether the food that we purchased is something that will enhance our health or whether it might be, as often we might look over the health factor and purchase something that we know is going to not be the best for us in terms of health. Now, there have been boxes of ice cream in the freezer at our house, and sometimes at night, I don't know who it is, somebody will go and get the ice cream out of the freezer and eat that, even though he knows it's not the healthiest thing for him. We have organically grown fruit and vegetables from our garden, which have vitamins and minerals, and they're important for our health. I noticed recently that there are dog food commercials, and the commercials are emphasizing the quality of the food for the dog, lest the dog would smell bad, lose hair, and be miserable himself. So that's going on. Even a dog's health is affected by the quality of his food. They also literally become what they eat. I'll give you an example of something that was very, very impressive to me for the man who used to be the pastor of the Buffalo Church back in the days when there were two congregations in Buffalo with 600 people in each congregation. His name was Dave Pack. Dave Pack is about 6'7", and he was then, I doubt if he still is, an excellent basketball player. And then one day he started to have a problem with his foot, found out he had a bone spur in his foot, and for 18 months he was on a cane. At the end of that time, he decided that he would try practicing a diet having to do with arthritis. And he practiced that, and within 2 or 3 months, he was out playing as good a basketball as I had ever seen him play, because he ate differently. And mostly he was into a vegetarian kind of thing, but as well, the meat that we eat influences our health and physical well-being. Principle: God has made men, and he made the creatures that we may eat. And as he does, he tells us certain meats are made for others and made for us, and others are detrimental to our health. God is the one who made them, and he is the one who made us, and he knows what is and what isn't. And God has provided information for us about what we eat. As I said earlier, eating healthy does not guarantee us eternal life. There are also many other problems which might cause us to become unhealthy. We have many people on our prayer list who for many years have practiced the laws of clean and unclean meat, and yet they develop physical problems. Here's what it tells us in Hebrews 9 and verse 27. It is appointed unto men once to die, but after this, the judgment. And I can be pretty sure that I can tell you that there is no man who has not experienced death, no matter how diligent he was in keeping the laws of clean and unclean food. And I don't expect that I will either. Nothing is guaranteed. Here's along those lines, here's a scripture to keep in mind, Romans chapter 6 and verse 23. The wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life. You know, eating clean and unclean meat is not going to give us eternal life. It is a gift from God through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the grace that results if we accept that sacrifice. But the point of the point, eating in accordance with the way God created our bodies is the simplest and easiest and most logical reason for obeying the laws of clean and unclean meat. Why obey it? Well, the beginning point is because we'll be healthier if we do, but I'll argue that it's not the only point. But it gives us a leg up. Let's look at things from God. Young people, we have young people here. New people, I think we have some relatively new people here. And even rusty old persons who have to sort of knock the rust off. Need to review and be redundant with the information about that. Here's a secondary point to keeping the laws of clean and unclean obedient. It is to learn obedience. Clean and unclean food and eat them. And here you are doing it and washing your food three times a day. And a large part of the reason why, especially at the beginning, is because you are learning to be obedient to God. Same with the Sabbath day, isn't it? We come and keep the Sabbath day because we are learning to be obedient to God. So if I'm going to speak about health and well-being, it's also about being obedient and learning obedience to God. So you get two for the price of one right there. I've never hesitated to explain when I go to a restaurant that I keep the laws of clean and unclean food. I learned that from an elderly man in Atlanta right after we came into the church in, well, it was probably 69, might have been 1970. Hazel and myself, Bryant was born in 68. And so this man in Spokesman Club, he was clearly embarrassed by the whole situation because he, in a table topics session, they had a segment of Spokesman Club called Table Topics, and they might call on you and ask you a question. You had to get up and answer it. It was to train you to be able to answer something on the spur of the moment. And so this man, I can't remember his name now, but I remember what he said. And I remember how he said it. Somebody asked him the question, what would he do if somebody approached him about why he was eating what he ate? And he sort of, with his head down, in an embarrassed way, he said, well, that happened to me. And the guy had asked me if I did it because of health reasons or because of religion. Now, he didn't mind telling somebody it was about health, but he was reluctant to mention that he was doing it for religious reasons. And so he nevertheless told him, well, it's some of both. He said, it's some of both. And I remember that, and that made me determined that I would not ever be ashamed or embarrassed by it. And anytime I go to a restaurant, I'm happy to tell. In fact, I may be a little bit too pushy, I don't know. I remember when, and we're right close to where the Buffalo Bills play football. We moved up here from Atlanta in 1973. It was about 1975. My boss, who was in Fredonia, not too far from here, call me up and ask me if I would like to come up to a Buffalo Bills game. I was always, of course, interested in football. And so I said, yes. And he said, well, you can bring Bryant with you. Bryant was, I think, 6, maybe 7 years old. I'm not really absolutely sure what year this was. But we hopped in the car and we came, and there were some other customers who came, and Bob Orchard was sort of hosting all of us. And before the game, we went to a buffet meal. And at that buffet meal, we're going through the line. Bryant's in front of me, and he hands his plate to somebody, and they pass the plate along, and they come to the ham, and whoop, 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 the knife is cutting the ham, and I panicked to get up there and stop Bryant from having ham put on his plate. Because I don't know if he'd ever seen ham before, but that was the scenario. And so, those are the kinds of situations that you may run into. But let's say, let's just pose this question. Here's a question that you may answer. Now, we gave physical reasons why. We gave at least a spiritual reason why. Obedience, learning obedience. We keep the laws of clean and unclean meats. But let's speculate a little bit here about why. I don't think it's that much of a speculation, but it could be regarded as somewhat speculative. Why did God make unclean and clean food? He didn't have to do that, did he? He could have just made one category. I mean, he was God, so he could do whatever he wanted to. He didn't even have to make us to need to eat every day or to eat at all. He could have made us just absorb something through the air. He could have made us in any way he wanted to, but he didn't. He made clean food and he made unclean food. And then we'll see here in a minute that he said, don't eat the unclean. He even says, don't touch it. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. He didn't have to do that. So I have to conclude that he is making an additional point for the reason why he did that. He had options to make. If he had just created one category, he would have simplified the whole point. God could have made us so that we didn't need to eat at all if he had chosen to do so. So let's ponder why God did what he did. To be redundant, God made it necessary for us to eat every day. Well, we don't eat every day. The Day of Atonement comes and we don't eat. And maybe a few times during the year, not as often as we ought to probably. But we fast because that's good for our spiritual health as well. God made it necessary for us to eat almost every day. And he made the food in such a way that we needed to exercise judgment. And there's judgment involved. And we are to learn judgment out of what's being done there. We go to the store, we pick up something, and we read the labels to see for sure if anything is in there that we should not eat. I can go into the store and I can pick up certain hot dog-like things or sausage things which say beef. But then you read the list of ingredients where it's talking about beef, and you find out the casings are made from pork. So it isn't all beef. It's beef maybe with the meat that's inside the casing, but the casing itself, pork, unclean. So we have to read the labels, we have to exercise judgment, and we have to be diligent. Those are things we have to do. Let's look at Genesis 1, verses 23 through 26, the fifth day of creation. It says, the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind. And he goes through some of the living creatures, cattle, creeping things, beasts of the earth after its kind. And it happened. It was so. God made the beast of the earth after his kind, the cattle after their kind, everything that creeped upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. You mean when he created unclean food, he saw that it was good? It was good, but not good to be, not good for us to eat. Maybe it was good because it was going to be a learning process if we have to deal with that situation. Verse 26, God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle and all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. God exercised judgment in his creation about what to create and what point he was going to accomplish by having created each one of them. Or we could conclude, if we don't think that's true, maybe God just had a bad day and made a mistake when he was creating things. Well, we don't think that God made those kinds of mistakes, do we? We're making God in our image if we think that he does. And we're not to make God in our image. Maybe he wasn't paying attention. Maybe it was an accident. No. No, it wasn't any of those things. Well, let's take a look what we said in the beginning of the SPS. We're going to talk about what the rules are, where those rules may be found. And so let's do that now. Leviticus 11. The rules of clean and unclean meat are found in Leviticus 11. And you also may find that they are found in Deuteronomy chapter 14. Leviticus 11, chapter 1. The Lord spoke unto Moses and to Aaron, saying to them, speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the beasts which you shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. Now that was maybe 1800 years after the Garden of Eden. And he's telling Moses and Aaron that he's giving them the rules about what is to be eaten and what is not to be eaten. Rules for every category, and there are three different categories given here. I'm just going to take one verse for each category because I don't have time to cover all of the rules here. So we'll just cover one verse for each category. But if you need refreshing, or if it's a new subject to you, first of all, know where to go to find this set of scriptures. Leviticus 11 is probably the best place. Deuteronomy 14 is maybe a little bit redundant, but redundancy can be a good way to learn. Greatest form of emphasis. In Leviticus 11 and verse 3, we just read verses 1 and 2. Verse 3, whatsoever parts the hoof and is cloven footed, and not just split hoof, you know, pork meets the criteria of having cloven hoof. But they don't meet this second criteria. And both criterias are necessary in order for God to say this is food which you can eat. And choose the cut. Pork doesn't pass muster on that. They do not chew the cud. It's kind of interesting, too. I've just noted it over the years that feet or ways of propelling themselves and the digestive system are the two things that make for a distinction between that which is clean and that which is not clean. Now, you got to have a split hoof. First of all, you got to have a hoof at all. You know, bear, for example, doesn't really have what we would consider to be a hoof at all. And it has to have a hoof, and the hoof has to be split. And then the digestive system must be in such way as he chooses it. It's a sore digestive system here. It talks about the animals that meet this. They chew the cud. So, and then here, Leviticus 11, verse 9. These shall you eat of all the creatures that are in the waters. Whatsoever has fins and scales in the waters and the seas and the rivers, them shall you eat. Fins are the way fish propel themselves through the water. Like the hoof is what propels the cattle and so forth, or even the pig as well, across the earth. And then these fish also have a digestive system that's different. So they shall eat, you shall eat, you may eat all that are in the waters, if they have fins and scales. In the seas, the rivers, them you may eat. Verse 13, third category. These are they which you shall have in abomination. Now you can search far and wide, and you will have a hard time finding a more important word or negative word in regard to that which is just undesirable than the word abomination. And so these are they which you shall have in abomination among the fowls. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. The word abomination in relationship to unclean food is being repeated often. Repetition is the greatest form of emphasis. You shall have an abomination among the fowls and shall not be eaten. They are an abomination, the eagle, the osprey, and the osprey. Now I think about the word abomination and I say, how can I make that word a little more graphic? Well, unfortunately, this past week, or maybe a little bit longer than a week, we had to have our septic tank in the front yard dug up. And that was an abomination. That's an example of what I think about with the word abomination. Or at the baseball game, you know, they have these porta potties that they put out because there isn't a real bathroom in the place. And every once in a while, I have to go in there, and there is nothing that is more abominable than that porta potty. So I hope that makes the point about something being abominable. It's really a simple thing, isn't it? God made them, He made us. Does He know best about what they are made for and what will be best for us? I think we all would consider that to be true. I had a grandmother. Her name was Josephine Barry. When I was just probably between Jackson and Mason's age, I went with my father to Monroe, Louisiana, from Atlanta, Georgia, about a 500-mile trip, to visit her, and I hadn't seen her in years. And she was in her mid-90s. And she had her own house. And we sat for one afternoon and talked to her, and I got something I put in my pipe. You know, this is an idiomatic expression. You might put something in your pipe and smoke it. Well, this I put in my pipe and smoked it because we were sitting there in her house, and she said, "The Bible tells us we are not supposed to eat pork." And I didn't know. I barely knew what a Bible was, and I didn't know anything about what the Bible contained. And so that sounded kind of strange for me. After we had finished the visit, concluded the visit, and left Josephine Barry's house, got in the car, my father said, "Now, we don't agree with her about everything." And I knew what it was he didn't agree with her about, that we should not eat pork. In my pipe and smoked it, and I still remember it to this day. There is not only physical food, the things that we buy at the grocery store, the things that we raise in the garden, the things that we have canned and eat all winter long, and sometimes even keep them in the garage for several years and don't get around to eating them. They're also physical food. So we have all kinds of physical food. But here's the question we're considering here. If, now we've talked about physical reasons being health and well-being, and we've looked at where the rules are. But here's a question that I posited in the SPS. And it is there a bigger point being made when God did this? Because He didn't have to do it. He didn't have to do it. It's what He chose to do because I'm convinced He thought it was best for us. And He said it's good. When He completed that, He said, "This is good." Well, let's look because at Matthew chapter 4 and verse 3, because I think this is a place where an analogy is being established. The analogy is that there is physical food, and if you keep the laws of physical food, you should look at them as well in terms of spiritual food. There is physical food and there is spiritual food. You eat the physical food so that your physical body will be healthy. You consume clean spiritual food so that your spirit will be clean and healthy. Matthew chapter 4, verse 3. When the tempter came, this is the situation here, is Christ has gone on the mountain and fasted for 40 days, and the tempter, who is Satan the devil, came and spoke to Christ. And he said, "If you be the Son of God, command these stones that they be made bread. He was hungry. He had not eaten in 40 days. And here's, you're supposed to be the Son of God. And he's appealing to the pride of Christ there at a time of his greatest weakness. He hadn't eaten in 40 days. If you be, the implication is, we both know better than that. You're not really the Son of God. Well, he did know better than that. He knew that Christ was the Son of God. If you be the Son of God, command these stones be made bread. That's an example of what kind of spiritual food? Unclean spiritual food. He's trying to feed it to Christ. And what did Christ do as a contravention to what he had proposed? Christ answered with clean spiritual food. Christ answered, it says in verse 4, and said, "It is written." He quotes the Bible. And the Bible, as Mr. Bell informed us during the sermonette, is an example, or it's filled with clean spiritual food. Christ answered this challenge. That's what it was, a challenge. He answered this challenge by putting forth clean spiritual food. He answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone." It isn't just about what goes in your mouth. Not by bread alone shall you live. Now, you've got to have bread to live. You've got to have physical food in order to live. And I'd say the word bread here is just a larger way to say physical food. You shall not live by bread alone, but you must live by every word. This is virtually a definition of what spiritual food is, isn't it? These two scriptures, these two verses of scriptures, identify for us what is spiritual food. The first one is from Satan the devil. And he's the great tempter who, it says in Matthew, in Revelation chapter 12, deceives the whole world. Man shall not live by bread alone. But instead of that alone, here's what you also need. It is spiritual bread. But by every word that proceeds forth from the mouth of God. I hope we all understand that's what distinguishes clean from unclean in a much greater sense than what we feed to our physical bodies. Satan and his demons are the authors of unclean spiritual food. And so to me, I say there is an analogy between physical food and spiritual food, which is identified by these two verses of Scripture. There is unclean spiritual food, which comes from Satan and his demons, and it is an, as far as God is concerned, it is an abomination. Think about the porta potty. Think about the septic tank. It is unclean spiritual food. Is an abomination to God. He says that about the physical food, doesn't he? but here in the spiritual food as well. It is an abomination to God, and we are not to so much as touch it. That's what it tells us in Leviticus 11. If we go and read Matthew chapter 6 and verse 11, we call that the Lord's Prayer, although it's really maybe better described as a sample prayer that God gave to his disciples. Verse 11 of chapter 6 in Matthew, it says, "Give us this day our daily bread." Is that just talking about what grandma's going to warm up in the kitchen? Cook does a really good job of that. In fact, there's a few pounds that testify she does a little bit better job of that maybe than she should. Of course, I am not a participant in that. Give us this day our daily bread. Is it just talking about physical food, or is there a greater point to which we ought to be concerned? Give us this day our spiritual daily bread. And this is a prayer that's to be prayed every day. Give us this day our daily bread. And we thank God for the physical bread that he has given to us, but we also thank him for the spiritual bread. And I hope you all prayed for spiritual food for today's sermon. Examples in modern Christianity. You know, we're primitive Christians. We're called by the religious world primitive Christians, and that's sort of, on the part of many at least, considered to be an insult because we are primitive. Actually, the distinction there, primitive Christians are those who follow the Bible as the apostolic church era did. And I wear it as a badge of honor, not an insult. But their modern Christianity has given us all kinds of unclean spiritual food. Worshiping on Sunday, that's an example of unclean spiritual food. Communion. They've done away with the Passover. We talked about that one of the recent sermons that I gave here, Quarto Decimum Controversy. They've done away with the Passover. And they've established Easter. What about driving down the road, you will see steeples and crosses. Those are symbols of sex worship. And you can see those there. Statues and icons. Hazel mentioned this morning, I was talking about this, the entertainment that is available to us in the movies and on television, and lots of other places as well. It is really unclean food. It has to do with violence and sexuality to a large extent, and homosexuality. Music, we can say, since the time when I was, you know, in high school, the quality of the music has deteriorated continually. So we have all of these examples of unclean spiritual food, and I'd say entertainment and music are spiritual food. And we're being fed those things to the extent that we can allow it to happen. And it isn't just about the food that's on our plate. It's about what we're being fed in other ways. So to me, this provides a very likely answer as to why God did what he did. I think it's pretty apparent, but it's not maybe in the same way that even Michael didn't deliver a railing accusation to Satan the devil. I'm not going to make it that pointed. But I will say this. We are to learn to love clean spiritual food and to hate unclean spiritual food. That's a part of fulfilling the covenant that we've made and which is required for us to be able to enter into the family of God. One other thing I'd like to speak to here is an attitude that the world, especially the modern Christian world, has, both Protestants and Catholics. These Old Testament laws, among which are the laws of clean and unclean meat, are only for the Jews. How do we know that, they say, that we're not under these laws, and so we can do as we please in accordance with the laws of clean and unclean, as though their digestive system was different from our digestive system. The requirements of their physical health were different from the requirements of our physical health. No. Did God, and he did, we read that he gave it to Moses. Moses and Aaron. He gave these laws to Moses and Aaron. But were they only for the Jews? That's the argument that is made. That's not true. Not true. They were for all of mankind. And here's a reason why I would say that that's true. The laws of clean and unclean animals, food, clearly existed for at least 700 years before the time of Moses. And I would suspect they go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, but we don't have much of a record of what happened prior to the flood. But from the flood out to Moses was 700 years. And here's what it says, Genesis chapter 7 and verse 1. The Lord said to Noah, now this is 700 years. I mean, I took that from the American chart of history. The Lord said unto Noah, Noah was 700 years before Moses, if I'm reading that correctly, come you and all your house into the ark. I have seen righteous before me in this generation. For you, I have seen righteous before me in all this generation. Now he tells Noah to bring 7 pairs of clean animals into the ark. 7 pairs. But of the unclean animals, only 1 pair. So did Noah know what the laws of clean and unclean were, which ones were clean and which ones were not clean? He had to know that, didn't he? And so he did. And any unclean animals that didn't come into the ark have ceased to exist, I guess. You know, or any clean ones either. And by the way, he was on that ark for more than a year. He and his 7 relatives were on that ark for more than a year. And they must have had something to eat. So when there were seven pairs, okay, we could take a little bit of what was there and eat it. And that species would not cease to exist. If there was only a pair, then that species, and one of them was eaten, then that species would have ceased to exist. The laws of clean and unclean were not just for the Jews. Noah understood them, and there wasn't going to be a Jew for another 700 years. Now, at that time, God did give them to Moses, but they'd already been extant on the face of the earth for at least 700 years. Noah understood them, used them in preparing to bring mankind through the flood. Seven pairs of clean animals. Noah and his family needed to eat. But let's just think of one more thing in regard to that. If God made a mistake in the first place when he created clean and unclean animals, he had a chance at that point to eliminate all the unclean animals by leaving them off the ark. So he would only have clean food. So it is clearly suiting God's purpose to have us learn the distinction between clean and unclean, and I would say not for physical reasons alone, but also for spiritual reasons. So we conclude that having unclean animals is serving God's purpose for bringing us and ultimately all of mankind into his family. And you've made a covenant to do that. Conclusion. From the time of Adam and Eve, there were clean and unclean animals. They served God's purpose. Our physical health was made subject to eating of clean and refusing the unclean. That's a beginning reason to learn this. Let's read for the last scriptures here, closing scriptures. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 14. In doing this, in keeping the laws of clean and unclean, you become an obedient child of God. And Peter says here in 1 Peter 1, verse 14, as obedient children, so we are to be as obedient children, not fashioning ourselves according to the former lusts that we had in our ignorance, but as he which has called us is holy. Is he who has called us holy? Who called us? God the Father calls, doesn't he? Jesus Christ chooses, and you and I have the responsibility to remain faithful. Those who are with Christ at his return are spoken of in the book of Revelation as being called, chosen, faithful. God the Father calls. Jesus Christ chooses, and we have the responsibility to remain faithful. But, verse 15, as he has called you is holy. Be you holy in all manner of conduct. It says conversation, but that's a mistranslation. Behave in a holy way in everything that you do. Because it is written, verse 16, be you holy, for I am holy. The word here, holy, is a synonym which could be translated as clean, be you clean, or it could be translated as be you pure. clean and unclean. You be clean. Be diligent to eat only that which God has made clean. Repetition is the greatest form of emphasis. It is also one of the most effective tools for learning. And so God has given us repetition so that we will learn. Be reminded every time you eat clean food that God has spiritual food which is clean, while Satan has unclean spiritual food.